direct and on the ground practical experience in Africa during his administration than the U.S. has. I'm not saying that the U.S. is totally disengaged from Africa. They're very much involved militarily, but in regard to economic relationships and economic models that may be beneficial to the African nation states, the U.S. Has taken a back seat to China.
And let's talk about the situation in Somalia. How has a U.S. policy in the region contributed to the fragmentation of Somalia?
In December of 2006, at the aegis of the previous George W. Bush administration, the government in Ethiopia, which is heavily allied with the United States, intervened in Somalia to put down the burgeoning influence of the Islamic Courts Union. Some 2 years later, they were able to broker a deal with the Islamic Courts Union, but it left out al-Shabaab, which is the youth wing of the ICU, the previous ICU. And they have attempted to isolate al-Shabaab. And in our opinion, that was a great diplomatic blunder in regard to any attempt to stabilize the situation inside of Somalia, which has been highly contentious over the last 30 years. So I think that in that regard, the U.S. has committed a grave error. The African Union mission to Somalia, AMISOM, is highly financed and coordinated and trained by the United States and the European Union. They have some 22,000 troops occupying the country, largely centered around Mogadishu, the capital. But it is still not totally stabilized the situation in Somalia. And the conflict in Somalia has spilled over into Kenya because you have ethnic Somalians who are in Kenya. And at the same time, the Kenyan Defense Forces intervened in Somalia 3.5 years ago at the aegis of the Pentagon with the coordination of the United States Africa Command. So the situation has been more complicated, and quite frankly, it has been weakened and destabilized as a result of failed U.S. foreign policy in the Horn of Africa.
And that intervention was following the massacre in the mall in Kenya, the Westgate massacre?
No, it was some nearly 2 years prior to the Westgate mall incident. In fact, the Kenya Defense Forces intervention into Somalia took place during the fall of 2011. It was called Operation Linda Inchi, and it turned out as a result of revelations that came out through WikiLeaks and other sources that this intervention in 2011 had been planned for at least 2 years. So the Westgate Mall incident happened long after the Kenyan Defense Forces intervened militarily in southern Somalia, ostensibly to protect its borders from al-Shabaab militants. But even the Somalian federal government, which is backed by the U.S. and the European Union, has problems with the way in which the Kenyan Defense Forces intervention is being played out in the southern part of Somalia.
And what about the increase in drone strikes in Somalia? I understand there's been 6 over the last week alone.
This is another major cause of concern because many of the people who are killed in these drone attacks, not just in Somalia, but in Yemen and other parts of the African continent and the so-called Middle East, are civilians. So many people have been killed in Somalia, not just recently, but over a period of at least 4 to 5 years. And most of the people who have been killed have been civilians. They have not been, quote, al-Shabaab Islamic extremist militants, unquote. So I think this is another problem that the Obama administration has to deal with, and it has turned many people into being very skeptical towards U.S. foreign policy in Africa.
And some have criticized President Obama's choice to attend an entrepreneurship summit while skipping out on the International Conference for Sustainable Development and in fact, sending a representative to the conference this past week that stopped an attempt to change tax codes that would prevent corporations from exploiting the resources of African countries. Could you talk a little bit about that and that choice by President Obama?
Well, the U.S. administration, not just under Obama, but also the previous government of George W. Bush, were totally opposed to any type of global sustainability strategy because it interferes with the profit-making capacity of the multinational corporations and international financial institutions. And that is the reality of the situation. This is why you cannot get any consistent foreign policy and environmental policy in particular in regard to climate change. It is highly politicized inside the United States. And the Obama administration has, for example, increased domestic oil and natural gas production over the tenure of his administration to the extent that now there's a glut in the world oil market. And this is causing a tremendous amount of economic difficulties for a number of countries, the Federal Republic of Nigeria, the Republic of Sudan, and not just in Africa, but also in other parts of the world, for example, in Venezuela, in Russia, and other countries that produce oil. So I think the U.S. energy policy is really guided by the petroleum firms as well as the international financial institutions.
And as we wrap up, I just want to ask you, as someone, your organization is based in Detroit, do you see some similarities of U.S. policy toward Africa in the kind of imperial colonialist sense, and what's happening in Detroit and in Michigan with the takeover by private industry of your public offices?
We most definitely do. We have a neocolonial economic and political system here in the city of Detroit and in all of the majority African-American populated cities throughout the state of Michigan. We have, of course, been subjected to state oversight, to emergency management, which ostensibly has been lifted, but the state oversight remains. We've also put into bankruptcy 2 years ago illegally, and the only purpose of the bankruptcy was to sell off public assets and to also loot public municipal pension funds to the tune of $6.5 billion. Also, the character of the economic development here in the city of Detroit is not designed to enhance the conditions and to empower the majority African-American population that still lives in the city of Detroit. All of the policy orientation is towards multi-billionaires, corporate magnates, and bankers. So that parallels to what is going on the African continent, even though we've heard a lot of stories about tremendous economic growth on the African continent. Still, the Millennium Development Goals have not been met. Still, we have a situation where in countries like Nigeria, which has been deemed the largest economy on the African continent, people are have an inability to get fuel, even though it's the largest oil-producing state in Africa. People are still facing poverty, unemployment, particularly among the youth, and also social and political instability. We see insurgencies in various states, for example, in Nigeria, in Somalia, in Kenya, and also problems in southern Somalia. And all of these states are heavily aligned with Washington and Wall Street.
Wow. And I know that your Pan-African News has been covering the case of Reverend Pinckney, Edward Pinckney of Benton Harbor. That's something that we, too, have been covering here at KBOO. And I wonder if you have any updates as to what's happened with him since he was imprisoned.
Well, yes. Our members have made several trips out to the facility where he's being imprisoned. It's the Coldwater, the Lakeland Correctional Facility in Coldwater, Michigan. He has just recently filed a brief for an appeal bond. Hopefully that will be successful and he can be released on bond. There's no reason for him to be in prison. There was no reason for him to be indicted and put on trial. He was involved in an effort to recall the mayor of Benton Harbor, who it was perceived was an agent of the Whirlpool Corporation, another multi-billion-dollar company, which was disempowering the majority African-American community in Benton Harbor. That was the only crime that he committed. They claim that he changed five dates on recall petitions, but there was no evidence that he had done this. There was no one who testified in court who said they saw him change the dates. So it was a complete racist frame-up of Reverend Pinckney, and he has been now imprisoned since December. So we're working very hard in the state of Michigan with our allies across the country to have him released on appeal bond. And then the overall case is going to be, is under appeal with the Michigan State Supreme Court. So hopefully that will be overturned in the not too distant future. But we want to get him out of jail, out of prison as soon as possible. That's why the appeal bond has been filed. And we're hoping that the Michigan State Appeals Court will release him on bond pending the outcome of the overall appeal.
Wow. Really incredible case that that just for exercising his democratic right to recall the mayor that he was imprisoned. And the charges, I think the sentence could be up to 10 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, he was sentenced to 30 to 120 months in prison. And even if he had have been guilty of this crime, it should not have been more than a misdemeanor. So this shows the selective prosecution that is taking place in the state of Michigan, right here in the United States of America. And it illustrates the human rights violations, the civil rights violations that are being committed right here in the United States. So when President Obama goes to Kenya and talks about how the LGBTQ community should be given equality, but in fact, people inside the United States, African-Americans, Latinos, Arabs, the Middle Eastern people, and also LGBTQ people who had a heroic decision in their favor in the United States Supreme Court to legalize marriage. But at the same time, the 1964 Civil Rights Act and all the other civil rights acts do not cover the rights of LGBTQ people. So it's somewhat hypocritical what the president is doing by emphasizing the question of LGBTQ rights when, in fact, here in the United States, people from the community, the LGBTQ community, can still be fired from their jobs. They can still be denied the apartment. They can be denied services through adoption agencies. They can also be asked or refused service, asked to leave or refuse service in a restaurant. So there's still a lot of civil rights and human rights work that needs to be done here in the United States.
Definitely. And I want to thank you so much for speaking with us. We're going to continue to cover President Obama's trip to Kenya and what happens there. And again, we've been speaking with Abayomi Azikiwe. He is with the Pan-African Newswire. You can find that online at panafricannews.blogspot.com. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
I'm a loving the old lion, a winner without fail.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the PDX Leo Party, Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian. A birthday celebration for all you Portland Leos with special performances from Sleep of Old Dominion and the Chicharrones, Mike Crenshaw, Smoke M2D6, and many more. Again, that's the PDX Leo Party on Friday, July 31st, starting at 8 p.m. at Kelly's Olympian, located at 426 Southwest Washington Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Every Monday night at 8 o'clock, you can hear this voice alerting you that
you are about to cross the border.
And then follow the footsteps to a two-hour-long sustained environment of uninterrupted sonic art or new electronic, experimental, or postmodern music, Audio that breaks and rewrites the rules to create entirely new worlds of sound. Where will you be on Mondays at 8 when the door slams shut? Here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the summer concert in Dawson Park, featuring a live performance by Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. The mission of Summer Concerts in the Park is to bring cultural diversity to metropolitan area residents. Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band play a full range of popular and traditional salsa, son cubano, timba, and tropical styles as cumbia, merengue, y bachata. Again, that's the Summer Concert in Dawson Park with Bamba y su Pilon de Azúcar Band on Wednesday, July 29th at 6:30 p.m. Dawson Park is located at North Stanton and North Williams Avenue in Portland. More information about ticket prices and directions can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the ever-present nuclear threat, Thursday, August 6th, at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Waterfront Park in Portland. 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki will feature speakers and performers, including Portland Taiko, and will provide opportunities for attendees to get involved in efforts to abolish nuclear weapons. That's 70 years after Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The ever-present nuclear threat, Thursday, August 6th, 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza at Northwest NATO Parkway and Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
The time is 6 p.m. and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.